What up? I'm Rock Harper. You're now listening to the Chef Rock Experiment, the podcast. Your journey to entertainment, empowerment, and education in the food business begins right now. Let's go. Chef Chris Hayes is a Food Network star, culinary consultant, and entrepreneur with a heart for the community. A Louisiana native, Chris was born in Shreveport and fell in love with cooking by watching his elders joyfully prepare food for family gatherings growing up. In the fall of 2016, Chris launched the Smoking Oyster Catering and his new cookbook, Welcome to Good Food, is slated for release in the summer of 2019. He's available for speaking engagements, culinary coaching sessions, and catering opportunities. My man, Chef Chris Hayes, welcome to the show, brother.
Rock, what's going on? How you doing this morning?
Man, I am blessed. I'm good. Good to speak with you, man. I know you're busy, so I appreciate you taking the time to come on the Chef Rock Experiment.
Yes, sir. Definitely. I appreciate you for having me.
Absolutely. So I read a little bit of your bio. I don't want to sell you short, but fill in how you got started in this cooking game, and you know, just give us a quick summary of your journey so far.
Well, like a lot of us, you know, growing up in the South, we had our parents, grandparents, and I was fortunate enough to have my great grandmother, you know, still around with me. You know, just looking back on some of the things that we did growing up as kids, we would have every weekend. And when I say every weekend was a time for fellowship with our family. Mm-hmm. You know, Friday night was maybe a fish fry. Saturday was a barbecue. Sunday, my grandmother and great grandmother and my granddad, they would get in the kitchen and cook a huge meal because we have a very large family. Mm-hmm. And it would 15, 20, 30 of us at my grandparents' house just piled up in the kitchen, dining room, eating, laughing, playing games, just having a good time, enjoying life. And the good thing with that is my grandfather would always tell me, you know, invite who you want to invite, meaning sometime all the neighbors from up and down the street came to get a plate. We're coming over to enjoy, play dominoes in the backyard, just, you know, have a good time. My family was always open, you know, that family to come, you know, if you needed something, my grandfather was the one to give it to you. And that's where I get it from.
Yeah. Yeah. And this was up in Shreveport.
Exactly. In Shreveport, Louisiana. Yes.
I see. Good eating. You had that house. You had that house on the block, you know, that everybody ran to.
The corner house. Everyone knows the big black and white two-story house on the corner. Hey, that's where Chris Hayes used to live. Everyone remembers that. I still have a lot of people who go by and see my grandparents, even that I'm not there. They still go by and check on them.
Yeah. slapping the bones down on the table, a little spades action going on.
Oh, man. Yeah. Spades, dominoes, you in the backyard playing hopscotch, whatever. We had it going on.
I love it. I was watching something on Instagram last night. This is off topic, but I got to bring it up to you. Do youngins know about the talking on the boards and talking across the boards and the code? You know, do they even know about that?
No, they don't. They do not. That's something that was lost. And, you know, if it comes back, I don't even think they'll understand it.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we're going to bring it back. I met a gentleman down in Virginia Beach that is doing a pop up, and I should know his name. I'll link to it in the show notes. I should know his name. But he's doing pop-ups around the block experience or the neighborhood experience. And I really dug the concept. So I'll send it to you after the show. But cool stuff. Okay, sounds like you could roll with one yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Now, tell me something about yourself that we don't know, that we wouldn't guess.
When people see me, they think for whatever reason, they think I'm a mean guy. You know, and that's not even a thing. And until you talk to me, until you, you know, have a conversation with me, I'm the easiest, most laid back, humble person you can meet. I chill out at home with the wife and kids. I don't go out, do any of that. If I go out, it's with my wife and kids. We relax, we have a good time. I'm big on family.
Yeah, yeah. I you know, we met down in New Orleans in 18 at a Gumbo Jubilee, Howard Conyers and Adrian Miller hosted. And I didn't think you were a mean guy at all. Actually, we first met, you said to me, milk and cookies, which was hilarious. You know, and it was good to hear. It brought a smile to my face, actually. I really needed that smile because it threw me back to my Hell's Kitchen time, man. So
Right.
Very nice intro. I appreciate that.
And you know what? You know what's funny? Actually, that season is one of the reasons I actually started watching Hell's Kitchen, because I was like, oh, okay, let's see what Rock gonna do on here.
My man.
And then when it actually kept going and kept going, when you got to the finals, like, oh, we have a chance here.
Yes, sir.
When you pulled out the milk and cookies, I just like, oh, look at here.
You gotta keep it basic, baby.
That took me back to childhood. Taking your milk, sticking in your cookies. Yeah, that's it.
That's what we do, man. It was fancy milk and cookies. That's all it was.
There you go. And look, that stuck in the back of my mind till this day. And when I saw you, that was the first thing I said, milk and cookies.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I was talking with some friends yesterday about how food, you know, it's not just food. What we're doing is we're taking people places. And, you know, it's a very, I think that's, you know, a privileged place to be and a special place to be able to, to transport people. And this is not even, you know, I was TV, so you didn't even taste the dish. This is, you know, so yeah, me saying, I appreciate that. And that's what we do as chefs, I believe, is we're storytellers and we allow
right.
people to go on the journeys with us.
Exactly. And that's the good thing. You know, you can tell a story and that person can relate to that story, can tap into what you're saying, you know, and they fill in the blanks, and everyone has a role to play. And
yeah.
it all falls into place.
Now, let me ask you, you went on Food Network, you on Cooks versus Cons. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about that experience.
That experience, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. It was hectic. you don't realize that time is actually moving that fast, but it was a very good experience. You know, I think I learned a lot during that episode. And when I say I learned a lot, it was, you know, I was able to balance myself as, you know, still had a good time, still laughing, still joking, but you learn how to work under pressure. You know, if you understand what I'm saying. Well, of course you understand, but how to work under pressure. You know, you have so much time to finish, you know, this one dish, you know, and you're remembering everything you're doing. You're working so fast. You're like, all right, I need to get this done. You know, all in a set amount of time.
Yeah. Do you think that reality TV, so you did reality TV, does anything get lost? I mean, a lot of people talk about, well, that's not what actually happened. What was your, I mean, obviously you can't fit all of the shooting into a 30 minute or 1 hour episode. How did you view that part with the, you know, what they edited and what actually happened? What was your take on that?
a lot of it, some of it I was happy that they didn't put in. And then some of it was, I was like, oh wow, like there's one particular part where I made a reference to my wife, and it seemed like every time they would cut to a scene with me talking, they would bring that part up about my wife. I'm just like, okay, all right. So now a lot of people, when they bring up the show, their first words are, did you give your wife the money she asked for? Did you give your wife her money? Did your wife get the money? I'm just like, all right, okay, gotcha. So that's one part that they just kept referencing. I'm like, all right, now, okay, we get it. I'm going to give my wife money. We get it. I'm going to take her on a trip. We get it. And that's one part that just kept playing over and over. I'm like, okay, All right.
You know, she held you to that one. You said it. I got documentation. I got the world knows.
Look, she definitely held me to that. She definitely did.
But that the way that you talk, it wasn't hard for you to cash in on that one. I'm pretty sure that felt good to cash in that one.
Oh yeah, most definitely. Yeah, she, like I say, she deserved it. She deserved it.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Would you do it again? Would you do more reality TV?
Of course. That's actually, I would love to. I'm actually pushing to do a little more.
Okay. All right. Reality producers, TV producers. I know y'all listen. I know at least two that listen. So I'm telling you, by the end of the interview, call Chef Chris Hayes. You've had a great career, and I know you got some exciting projects coming up. And you've been doing this for a little bit, since the age of 15.
Yeah.
Talk to me about the worst moments, the rock bottoms where, you know, you didn't know, or if they existed, where you didn't know if you were going to go on, or if it was worth it, or however you would define it. But talk to me about some of your low moments, or one in particular that stands out.
As a matter of fact, I do have a low moment. This was when I was living in Shreveport. Before I moved to New Orleans, I was the executive chef at a place called Lanza on the Lake. And they were known for seafood, of course, fresh seafood, gumbo, oysters, mussels, steaks. They were pretty well known.
Mm-hmm.
So we had new owners that came in and took over. And they started cutting back on the quality of the food. Anyone that's in the food industry knows, you can kind of maneuver and make a few things work, taste good. But when you start messing with the integrity of your food, then that's a problem. So we started going with low grade cuts of beef, not the freshest seafood that we were getting at first. And that started bothering me a little bit. I really didn't notice until maybe 2 or 3 months in. You think, okay, yeah, all right, let's try this. And once you go with it, you're like, all right, it'll work, but I'm not happy with it. It's not the best. And then once your customers start complaining, you start having issues, the Yelp reviews come out, your business start to fall off a little bit. You remember once when 6 months ago on a Saturday night, we did 15,000, 16,000, 17,000 this night, and your sales drop back, you're looking at 6,000-7,000, you start to think, like, what's going on?
Right.
And you start to read the reviews, what's going on with the chef, what's going on with the food, what's going on with the quality, food not tasting right. What was it? I used to make clam chowder, and I would use razor clams.
Mm-hmm.
And, when they cut back, start going to the little neck clams and cutting back on everything else. I'm like, this isn't what I do. If you can give me the power to open everything up and do what I want to do, I guarantee we'll have business back. But they were real tight with their money.
Was it bottom line first? They looked at
cost
first. Yeah,
that's exactly what they looked at.
Now, I'm sorry to interject here. What was it? Management changed, or?
Yeah, they were bought out by new owners. Like again, okay. I don't want to give the names, but
yeah, I understand.
It was we very nice business, thriving business, very good. It had been open for like 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were up in age and they were ready to sell. So when they sold to the new owners, they came in and they wanted to change the menu to they left some of the staples on, but they wanted to put more of what they like on the menu.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Just on the new owners, what was their background? Were they restaurateurs or?
They were not restaurateurs at all. They were. The guy was, he owned a lot. He had a lot of oil, handling a lot of oil.
That's so he knew how to make money.
Yeah.
He knew how to make money, but not in the restaurant business at that point.
Not in the restaurant business. He knew how to make money, and they call themselves restaurateurs from traveling, eating here and eating there. That's not a restaurant.
Right.
Eat. No. You're not, you know. And they would travel and things that they've tried, they've had, you know, different places they've been. They want to come back and try to recreate that, you know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And everything doesn't work everywhere.
No. So, you can say that again. So they're pretty, I cut you off, but yeah, pretty. So it sounds tough. Like you're going through that pretty tough time.
Right. You know, you steady getting pushback from look, if I order this, you know, like, no, why'd you order this? Let's go ahead and do this one. Like, look, that's not going to work. You're selling a sirloin for $30 versus the Angus that we had before, you know?
Right.
You can't do it. It's not going to work.
Right.
And you think you're going to get the same, you know, the same texture, the same taste. You want to do it exact same way. No, that's not going to work.
Right.
So that was, and that started to wear on me after a while. You start reading the negative comments, you know, you start thinking like, all right, well, you know, what's the problem?
Mm-hmm.
And then your name is out there. Your name is on every dish that goes out. You know?
It's your name on the menu. You can't.
Exactly.
Yo,
exactly.
Nobody on Yelp is like, well, I do understand that the quality of the, you know, ownership has their hand. Like, nobody knows that. I'm talking to somebody who I might consult for, and they want to put my name on the menu. And I said, listen, you know, name is another thing for me, you know, giving you a consultant plan. My name, you know, at the end of the day means a lot, because if you're not executing, it's not, oh, well, a line cook or the ownership changed the cut. It's rock sucks right now. You know what I mean? So
exactly. Yeah. And that's the big thing. You're looking at like, look, if the food suck, that means I suck.
Right.
You know? And after so long, you're hearing it, you're like, the food is horrible. This is trash. You're just like, you say a year ago, I was on top of the world, fine, happy, loving life. And then all of a sudden, you know, you have a shift in management, you know, ownership takeover that comes in. It's like, all right, so you have so much you're trying to deal with.
Yeah.
So many people you're trying to make happy. You're trying to adjust this. You're trying to change this. You're trying to fix this to their liking, in which it's not about what you like. Excuse me. What you like as the owner, we should be trying to, you know, cater to our customers.
Right.
You know, this, they started taking it as their personal playground. You know, this is where I'm going to come invite all my friends and
yes.
We're gonna have a good time and sit back and relax and enjoy. And basically, I was their personal chef, you know, that's what it boiled down to.
Mm. Now, how long did this, with new management, new ownership, how long did that last? Like, what was the time period?
I had been there for 5-6 years before new ownership was taken over. And after that, I think we stayed in business about 3 years. I left my second year of new management, of new ownership. I left within the second year. I just, you know, had enough. And then right after I left, maybe a year, almost two, they end up closing the doors.
So you stayed on for 2 years?
Yeah, I stayed on for 2 years.
How did you cope during that time? Were there any, and I mean, when I say how did you cope, like specifically, because I've been in that situation, I think many chefs have, mm-hmm. How, you know, you said war on you. And I think one thing that I want to bring to light is, you know, let me be vulnerable. Let me be honest here. Like, a lot of times, you know, when that's happened to me, you know, I turn to like alcohol and other, you know, I just turn to, you know, maybe being really angry. Right. So,
yeah.
How did you cope during that time? And then how did you, you know, this is your secure place. Like, you had been there for a while. So how did you end up saying, you know, it's not worth that? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like you say, that's your secure place. That's the place where you know, and you felt like, I know the ins and outs. I know everything about this building, about the food, about my customers, you know? And yeah. That was the biggest thing. When your customers start to, you know, slowly drop off, you know, and you see that they're not happy with their meal, that starts to wear on you. You know, it had gotten to a point to, like you say, yeah, you start going out every night having drinks, you know, after a shift. You have when the shift's over, you sit at the bar at work and have a drink and just think and talk to your employees, talk to your staff about, what do we need to do to boost sales? What do we need to do, you know, to get sales up? And that's, you know, you every night constantly drinking. You're going out, you're drinking. You're trying to drink away the problems and the anger that you have towards what's going on, you know, not knowing or not thinking that you're putting yourself in, you know, you're backing yourself down in a hole.
Right.
Come to work the next day, you know, hell, still hungover from the night before. You're already not happy dealing with management. Your staff, you know, they have an attitude as to, you know, hey, why are we here? You know, they have this I don't care attitude, nonchalant attitude, and it becomes real toxic within the workplace.
Right.
Yeah. Then with that, you know, a lot of times you have to take a step back and, you know, refocus yourself. And I felt like that place was actually putting me in a hole. It was making me a person that I didn't want to be. That's when I made the decision to actually leave, you know?
Mm-hmm. And go ahead. I'm sorry, Joe.
Once I actually left, you know, and I moved away and I refocused myself to see, all right, this is where I went wrong. This is where everything went wrong. And excuse me. And I challenged myself from then, if I am ever in a situation to where new management comes in, new ownership take over, this is a sit down that we will have to have moving forward before anything else is done. We will have to discuss the terms of what's going on with the food. What do we plan on changing? Are we looking at going with you know, the integrity of the food? We cannot change it. This, hey, whatever the case may be, what are you looking for? I need to know your background. You need to know my background and my history. I need to know what you're looking for, what you expect, and the same, you know, vice versa. So we can have, you know, mutual respect across the board going on. Mm-hmm. So that way we can understand each other and we won't have these problems again.
Now, this is one, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I know that I was in a place like very similar to this. And it was toxic. Ownership was horrible. And I was really angry. I mean, super. It was probably the angriest of my life, maybe of my career. Well, both. And I was speaking with a friend of mine afterward and dumping, you know, all this stuff. And he hit me with something. And he said, well, what did you do? What was your role in all of this? And I wasn't ready for that because I was in victim mentality at the time. And I was like, what? You know, I didn't do anything. I did my job. I worked really hard and blah, blah, blah. And he said, well, Rock, you know, he's a mental health guy. He's a master social worker. So he sort of does this for a living. You know what I'm saying? Right, he's picking at me. But he knew me too. We'd worked together. And he said, well, I understand that they didn't do anything, but it might behoove you to reflect on what you could do better or what you could have done differently, you know, just for yourself. And that was a shift. When I tell you, Chef, that was a shift for me. It was a big shift because how I approach situations in the future, you know, people can be held accountable for their actions, but how, you know, what are you doing? What about you? Are you constantly improving and trying to become better and develop yourself and your practices? And what did you do? You know, you're not perfect. So you obviously did something. And it took me a while to get over the anger that I had for the ownership and management. But that tool, that process of looking in the mirror and saying, hey, you know what? I could have done, you know, I could have done, like, the reason why I'm asking or I'm telling you this story is because you talk about we should have sat down, you know, we should have had these conversations or next time if I'm in this position. And that to me comes out of a state of reflection, like, okay, I didn't do that. You know, the same thing with me. I just figured because of my past experiences, this is the way it was going to be. You know, as opposed to reassessing the situation. So it sounds like you did that as well. Like, what can I do in the future to make sure that, to mitigate? You can't ever have a perfect situation, but to make sure that it's not as bad as it is now.
Right, exactly. And then you're exactly right on that. Exactly. Like I say, when you look back at it, you can, you know, you look at, well, if I would have done this differently, you know, if I would have stopped and not took my anger out on everything and everyone versus going to the source and just try to sit down and talk about the problem. Let's see what we can do to fix this versus, you know, tempers flaring. No one really is talking to anybody. You're just going in day by day doing your normal routine and just to get the day over with.
Right, right. I totally understand. Now, tell me about, you're on the road right now, and I had your char grilled oysters with that sauce. You know, you can't, I can't even say sauce. Sauce, you got that. I saw somebody on Instagram that had, I forget who it was, but somebody had your char grilled oysters for the first time, and they were going bananas. How did you get to the point where you know, the light bulb went off, and you're like, okay, here it is. I'm going to do my thing. Talk to me about the sort of where you at now.
It came from, you know, again, I've worked at various restaurants, you know, over the years. And for the past 10 years since I've been in New Orleans, I've witnessed, you know, people going crazy over char-grilled oysters, over oysters, period, you know. And every restaurant that I've been to, you know, They're almost the same. You know, everyone has this garlic butter sauce that they use, you know, and I was just like, okay, it needs to be something different. Something needs to change about these oysters, you know. And I just started playing around. And when I would have customers come in, they'd say, I want this. I'm sorry, I'll tell you what, let's try this. I would actually go back and completely, you know, just get away from the menu and just start doing my own thing. And I would bring it out, and needless to say, we've had a lot of customers come back looking for me, or if I'm not there, they would want the oysters that I tried that I gave them last time, which no one knew how to make, what was in it or anything, you know. And they would call and say, "Hey, chef, we have some guys here who's looking for something you did for them a couple of days ago," you know. Mm-hmm. And that became a routine. And I just thought about it, you know, like, you know, that again, a little light bulb pops off. Let's see how this works out. And I was just playing around and you know, kind of put my own little recipe together for char-grilled oysters. And everywhere I've gone, everyone I've served those to, they just, it's ridiculous. They go crazy over them. Mm-hmm. And the sauce mm-hmm. itself, you know, it's good on just about anything. It's a great marinade. If you're a big hot wing fan, it's great on wings, anything. You know, hey, that's a universal sauce.
Yeah, it's really good, man. I don't know. I don't even want to know what's in it. I'm not going to ask you like a bunch of shows. I don't care. Yeah. I just want to eat it. That's it, you know? But it is has the depth. It's complex, but it's simple. But you can tell, I can tell that, you know, it's not just some stuff you threw in there. It's deep and it's rich. It has a wonderful balance. And yeah, it's just great sauce, man. I hope you bottle it and make $1 billion off of it.
Hey, definitely. I appreciate it. And that's, you know, hey, that's one of the things that we're looking at also. We're looking at doing with a couple of sauces like that. And just like I said, want to get into the whole scheme of everything, not just limit yourself to being, okay, I'm a chef in the kitchen. No. You have to think outside the box. You have to put yourself out there, you know?
Yeah, why especially are you...
if you want to make it, you know, in the culinary game.
Why are you expanding? Like, what's the motivation behind expanding beyond the kitchen?
To you know, not just limit myself. You know, there's more to me than just the kitchen aspect of it, you know? A lot of people don't know that, hey, I own a janitorial service, you know? I'm more than just, you know, your average chef.
You own a janitorial service. Okay, I didn't know that. Well, I think yes. You told me, but
yeah, it's called Hayes Janitorial Service. That's one of the aspects, you know, one of the things that, you know, I keep kind of, you know, I step back on that and let everyone else do everything. I kind of take the back seat on that one.
Why? So I'm talk to me about that, because many people would say, well, why would a chef do anything other than cook? And you have something that's it's pretty much unrelated to cooking. And you have this other business. What got you started along that path, and how did you choose janitorial services?
That's something my family, once again, that's something my family started back in, I think I was a sophomore or junior in high school. My brother and everyone was like, look, we're thinking about starting a family janitorial service. And me, you know, I was like, who want to clean toilets? Who want to clean up behind somebody? Need not, you know, thinking about years to come that I would be doing this, you know? Right. And that was the bit I was like, I'm not going to do that. Y'all can have that. You know, certain days, you know, my brother, hey, I need you to come help me do this, or I need you to go take care of this building. And, you know, I'll do it just because of the family and the ass.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one. And going back to one of those low points, you know, one of those low points where you find yourself drinking and, you know, you just want to completely get out of the culinary game. You want to completely get out of hospitality because you've had some low points and like, look, I can do something else with my time. This isn't it. You know, mm-hmm. one of those mm-hmm. moments to where you look at that. OK, I can fall back on this. This is something that I can, you know, make a little money off of to hold me over.
Right.
And
right.
I believe that was a turning point in between that when I, at my low point, you know, drinking every day, trying to find another way out, I fell into doing the janitorial service. And that, you know, all right, I picked up a contract here, and I picked up another contract here, and picked up another contract, and it just kept rolling like that. And I was like, I need to hire a few employees. So wow. Once I start hiring people, you know, they start doing the contracts for me. And then you start to feel a sense of pride again, you know, self-worth. And I was, you know, hey, let's try this restaurant thing again, you know, which I never really stepped away from the kitchen for long. I think maybe 6 months was the most that I, you know, stepped away. And that time you really miss it. You don't realize Absolutely. How much you miss it until you are actually away from it. And then right. Around that time, that's when I got a phone call from one of my old directors who offered me a position here in New Orleans. And so I talked to my family, talked to my brother and everyone. I was like, well, look, I'm thinking about moving to New Orleans. You know, what are we doing with the janitorial with my contract? So I gave my brother, you know, the contract that he had left given to me. I gave it back to him and I ended up moving. Came down here to New Orleans, started working executive chef restaurant on Bourbon Street. I was like, all right, this is paying the bills, but I need something else. I need something else. So again, I fell back into that. We go ahead and jump into this janitorial service work. Jumped into it. And again, the contracts came in. I started hiring people. And being that coming from Shreveport to New Orleans is a completely different experience. When I say completely different, completely different. So you're looking at drinking all day, all night, 24/7. You're looking at food all day, all night, Bourbon Street, anything goes. It was one of those situations to where I found myself waking up in my car the next day, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wake up and it's like one of those scenes that you see on the TV. Guy gets off work after a long shift, after a Mardi Gras shift at that. You go out, you start drinking, you just get loaded. You wake up in your car and all you can do is walk downstairs, cross the street, and you're back at work.
Yeah, I've had a couple of those before.
Well, yeah, that was my life for maybe a year.
Right.
Yeah, and yeah, that's one of those.
Yeah, that took a toll, I would imagine.
That took a big toll on my life.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, yeah,
can't do those when you get older. You can't do those. Well, some guys do, but they start they wear on you.
I tell you, if you're not used to it, New Orleans nightlife will suck you in.
What advice would you have for somebody, you know, whether it be a young cook or even a chef, you know, because that's pretty exciting, right? That's one of the things about our industry. I think you're seeing a shift is how we glamorize that or how we glorify that life when it really is not sustainable, nor is it healthy.
Right.
What advice would you give to someone just coming in? Because at the other side of that coin is, like, it's all right to, you know, me, for my personal opinion, you can party and drink. No, like, I'm not anti-alcohol. I'm not anti-anything that gets your mind right. Or, you know, have a good time unless it's illegal, but
right.
You know, but too much of anything can be destructive. So how would you if, you know, somebody came to New Orleans, it's like, oh, you want to, same thing with Vegas. Like you can't dive all the way in. You got to have a balance, but how would you balance?
I would tell them, you know, hey, if this is where you really want to be, you know, in the culinary field, you have to balance yourself, because the culinary life, restaurants, especially in New Orleans, Bourbon Street will take you real fast. Will suck you in so quick to you trying to find your way out. You know, you have to have a strong mind.
Mm-hmm.
You have to deal with the criticism. You have to deal with, you know, with everything that comes along with working in the kitchen. Long hours, long days. Mm-hmm. The women, you know, hey, that that becomes a big problem at times also.
Yeah, I bet.
Again, because New Orleans, hey, everyone's here for a good time.
Right.
So that plays a big part also. And then like for the young guys, you know, like I say, hey, this is something new. If this is what you really want to do, you know, you're going to have your ups and downs, and you're going to have that experience to where you think that, hey, this is the life. Don't put all your eggs in one basket, you know.
That's right. That's right.
Remember, there's a life beyond, you know, what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. We came to the point of the show. We're at the point of the show where I'm going to ask you something. I call it on the fly. So you're a chef. You know what that means. That I asked for it. I need it with wings. So first thing that comes to your mind when I ask you a question. Are you good with that?
Of course.
All right. What is the biggest roadblock in your path?
Myself.
Okay. Greatest rapper of all time.
Curtis Blow. I'm an old school junkie. I'm an old school. I gotta go with Curtis Blow.
No, yes, that is the first, brother. A lot of people answer that question. Curtis Blow was the first. You originator of that answer, on this show at least.
A lot of people throw out Jay-Z and Nas. And, yeah, nah.
Curtis Blow for you. I ain't mad at that.
You had to go with the originals.
Yes, sir. Fill in the blank. Without blank, I wouldn't be successful.
My wife.
That's what's up. Four. I don't even know why I just said the number. Like, nobody can see. Why did I do that? Finish this sentence. The restaurant industry needs
more young African-American chefs.
Period. Lastly, talk about where you get your inspiration from.
My inspiration comes from my grandparents to my parents to my family to my kids.
Yeah.
You know, seeing how much joy I had growing up as a big family and everything we did together. I want to instill that in my family now, in my kids. So therefore they can, you know, do it with their kids. They can always say that they had, you know, they had a positive home to come home to. They had positive people to be around. They had role models to look up to. They had people, you know, showing them right from wrong, holding their hand to guide them, you know, versus a lot of kids don't have that nowadays.
Yeah. That's beautiful, man. I know that. I just want to, you know, give you some props here, because I know that, you know, when we met, you were talking about the work that you do in the community with the youth, and how you take your you know, your talents around the different schools and different programs.
Right.
And I just think that's phenomenal, because as we all know, everybody knows representation matters. So when I see something in someone else that looks like me or sounds like me or came from places that I came from, it really can be a big bridge or ladder for me to get up out of where I am, or to aspire higher. So, you know, props to you, brother, for all the work that you're doing. And I just appreciate that about your story.
Yeah, most definitely. I appreciate it. Look, I appreciate you and your inspiration for the milk and cookies, and
yeah.
to actually, you know, make someone else, you know, look at reality TV and say, oh, it's, you know, we can, you know, come out on top. We can win some of these things. We can enjoy this, you know?
Yeah, no doubt. Before we go, can you just share with the audience just some parting words of wisdom?
Never take life too serious. but always take yourself serious. Never put down what you wouldn't want to go back and pick up. You can always leave it behind, but you can never forget about it.
I can dig that. I can dig that. Hey, man, where can people find you, contact you if they want to hire you for all of the businesses that you have, cooking, janitorial services, and I know you do some public speaking, and where can people locate you?
You can find me at The Smoking Oyster on Instagram. You can find me at The Smoking Oyster or Chris Hayes on Facebook. Twitter, I am Chef Chris Hayes. Or you can just reach out at any social media if you live in the New Orleans area. Hey, I'm all around. When you see the red trailer with the big smoking oyster symbol on the back, just follow me.
Follow him, honk, tell him pull over. If he's on the road, for him to fire up the grill, it's only take about $500. Like, but you know, if you got 500 and you know he's on the highway. No, I'm joking, man. Chef, it's great to have you on the show.
But yes, that's sir. The thing, though. A lot of times when I have the trailer on the highway,
yeah,
and it's smoking, there's food on there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I light my pit up, I throw meat on, and I'll drive around just let it smoke.
Yeah,
and I will pull over.
Ooh, so if you see the smoke, okay, scratch that. If you see the smoke, where there's smoke, there are oysters. Honk at them.
Smoke, there will be food.
Yes, sir. I'm gonna rock that T-shirt.
Hey, look, and check it out. If you are in New Orleans area, Mississippi area, tomorrow night we will be in Bay St. Louis at the 100 Men's Club. It's an old jazz blues museum. I'm sorry, blues club. That some of the greats have played at. James Brown. Just a lot of them you can think of. They were one of the first places that they started out at. They have a concert tomorrow night, and the Smoking Oyster will be there. We will have oysters, and we will have this new thing I call Holy Ghost wings. Just come on and try.
Ooh, Holy Ghost. Uh-oh. Now you talking. You make you jump up and get something in you.
There you go.
My man, I appreciate you coming on Chef Rock Experiment. We will see you upward and beyond. Thank you for all that you do and keep doing it, brother.
Yes, sir. Definitely. Appreciate you for having me, Rock.
Peace. I'm Rock Harper, and you've been listening to the Chef Rock Experiment podcast. You can follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. If you've made it this far, take a moment to head on over to Apple Podcasts and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Join me next week for another episode of the Chef Rock Experiment, TCRX. Until then, thank you for listening.